Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loride. We're going to get an update later on today on the possibility that there may be a catastrophic disaster at that Piney Point holding pond for an ex-phosphate mine in Manatee County. And that update comes to us from the Manatee County government. They'll be doing that at 1 o'clock this afternoon. So we'll get some information about that. Sean has some information about the Piney Point potential disaster, too, today on the Midpoint program. So stick around for that. Coming up today on Radioactivity, we're going to hear Florida This Week. We'll get both sides of the debate over whether or not Florida needs to enact voting laws similar to what Georgia has carried out. And we'll hear both sides of that debate and more coming up on Florida This Week. As we listen back to the program, you are welcome to email us and engage in the conversation by emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. And later on, we'll open up the phone lines and talk about it. But here is Florida This Week, which is a program that originally airs on the PBS station WEDU-TV on Friday night. Coming up next, the number of COVID-19 cases in Florida rises, but deaths are dropping. The state legislature moves to put limits on voting. News reports indicate that North Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz is under investigation over his alleged sexual relationship with a juvenile and the passing of a radio icon. All coming up on Florida This Week. Welcome back. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis boasts that the state is furthest along in the country in reopening society and welcoming tourists, but some top scientists are warning that the virus is still not completely under control. The number of confirmed coronavirus cases in Florida has been steadily rising, though hospitalizations and deaths are down. The daily average of new cases is now higher than it was 2 weeks ago. Several media outlets reported this week that Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz of North Florida is being investigated by the U.S. Justice Department. Gaetz denies any criminal wrongdoing. The reports are that Gaetz is accused of having a sexual relationship with a 17-year-old girl and paying for her to travel with him, and is under investigation to determine if he violated federal sex trafficking laws. A national conservative group, the Heritage Foundation, is pushing the state legislature to change Florida's election laws. There's already a bill, HB 7041, that would restrict the use of drop boxes, require more extensive use of photo IDs for people voting by mail, and make it easier for partisans to challenge voters' signatures. This week, as the George Floyd murder trial got underway in Minnesota, a person who lit the fire and burned down a North Tampa strip mall during last year's protests over the Floyd killing pled guilty to federal arson charges. He could serve as many as 20 years in prison. And also this week, longtime Tampa radio personality Ted Webb died. Webb was part of the conservative morning team on WFLA AM, who started his career in radio more than 50 years ago as a teenager. Ted was a former panelist on this program, and while he held strong opinions, he could be charming and funny, and he was always entertaining. Ted Webb was 72 years old. The state legislature is moving to limit voting by mail and make other changes to election laws. House Bill 7041 in the legislature creates new provisions for voting in Florida, including making it illegal to hand out food and water to voters who are standing in line within 150 feet of a polling place. State Representative Blaise Ingolias sponsors the bill and represents Florida's 35th district, which includes Spring Hill and Brooksville in Hernando County. Previously, he was the chair of the Republican Party of Florida from 2015 to 2019. And Representative Ingolia, welcome back to Florida This Week. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Rob.
So my first question is, by making it a little bit more difficult to vote in Florida, what problem are you hoping to solve?
Well, look, the first thing I want to say is that voting in Florida is very, very easy. You have up to 45 days of voting in Florida. You have three different ways of voting in Florida. But what a lot of this boils down to is that when you go to vote in the polls, there are a lot of safeguards, but there's hardly, if any, safeguards when you vote by mail. And what we're doing is we're proposing some very common sense solutions to make sure that we are putting those guardrails and putting them around vote by mail.
Have there been documented problems of people voting illegally by mail here in Florida, widespread problems?
Yeah, well, they have over the years. I think from 2010 to 2015, there have been 20 people who have been arrested. There was a grand jury that convened in Miami, and one of their recommendations was to make sure that we get rid of ballot harvesting, because they said that was a big problem. And that's one of the things that we're trying to do in this bill, is eliminate ballot harvesting. And there has even been a race that has been overturned because of fraud, because of people taking vote by mail ballots and then forging signatures. So this isn't an isolated problem. But look, our job is to make sure that we have the safest, securest election that we can in the state of Florida, while still maintaining access to the ballot box. And I think that this legislation does that.
As I've covered elections, I've seen long voter lines in some parts of the Tampa Bay area, and I'm wondering, how do we achieve a better democracy by saying to people that are working at the polls, you can't hand out water or food to people that are standing in a long line close to the polls?
Well, so the first thing is where I think it's you need to understand that that law is already on the books. It's already on the books saying that you cannot solicit anybody online within 100 feet. We're moving that to 150 feet. But the argument saying that we're denying people water and food is just absolutely disingenuous. In fact, it's laughable, because here's why, is that you can be outside the 150 foot buffer zone. You can hand out water. You can hand out food. All we're saying is that you cannot bother somebody while they're in line within the 150 feet. Now, there's nothing preventing people from going and taking the food outside of the 150 foot line and bringing it in online. And there's nothing preventing supervisors of elections from handing out water. So it's a disingenuous argument. It's a little frustrating because they're mischaracterizing what is in the bill and what is in current law.
I mentioned at the top of the show that the Heritage Foundation is sponsoring this bill and similar bills, or at least has suggested language for this bill and similar bills across the country. In Georgia, they say that a bill like this is a voter suppression. What do you say to them?
Well, first of all, the Heritage Foundation has not contacted me with any language for this bill. Obviously, you know that I've been party chair and I've been watching elections. I run elections, including my own. And I'm just putting into statute to fix some of the problems, ongoing problems that we've seen in the state of Florida. So, but as far as voter suppression, that's laughable. Like I said at the top of the show, when I first came on, you have up to 45 days of voting. Three different ways of voting: vote by mail, you can vote early at the polls, you can vote early at your precinct. Anyone who says we're suppressing anybody's votes clearly isn't paying attention to what's going on here in the state of Florida.
Representative, one last question. That is that the legislature is moving to get people who purchase items online to make sure that the state sales tax is paid. Will that benefit the state coffers, and or how will the revenue be used that's collected if this bill passes?
Yeah, and I expect the bill to be passed. Speaker Sprouls and President Simpson have already sort of agreed to the framework. This is a big deal in Florida. We've always viewed it as a collection issue. It was money that should have been collected before, but now we have to have legislation through the Wayfair decision, a court decision, where we now are going to start collecting it. But what we do with the money, I think, is the big thing here. So businesses, especially small businesses, are going to get crushed with up to a 700% tax increase for their unemployment taxes to refill the coffers that were used because of the pandemic. We are going to backfill that and make that solvent. It will take about 4.5 years to do so. And then after that, we're taking the money and we are reducing the business rent tax. We are one of the few states in the nation that still has a business rent tax. We're reducing it from 5.5% to 2%. So what does this mean? This means that Florida will remain the number one destination for businesses. We are helping our small businesses get off of their feet while we're getting through this pandemic. And it's just another reason why everyone wants to move to Florida. Our unemployment rate is 4.7% now. It's one of the lowest in the nation. We're recovering quicker. And this piece of legislation will be a supercharge for small businesses.
Representative Engolia, thanks for coming on this program.
My pleasure. Have a great day, Rob.
House Bill 1 is legislation designed to crack down on violent protests here in Florida. The controversial bill has prompted a strong debate in Tallahassee and across the state. Fentress Driscoll represents Florida's 63rd House District, which includes parts of Tampa and Hillsborough County. She's an attorney with Carlton Fields. Fentress Driscoll, thanks for coming us on Florida this week. Great to see you.
Hi, Rob. Great to see you, too. Thank you for having me.
The backers of HB 1 have been saying continuously since this debate started that they don't want Florida to have the same kind of problems that we've seen in Portland or Seattle. They say we need more laws against protesting to keep down the kind of violence they say was out on the West Coast. Do we need more laws governing protests?
No, we don't. And what's interesting is that those same proponents, chief among them, Governor Ron DeSantis, last summer in the wake of the Black Lives Matter protest, he went on record saying that we don't have those sorts of those problems in Florida. And we know that studies show that over 90% of protests nationwide that occurred in the wake of the murder of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and the killing of too many unarmed Black people to name, those protests, over 90% of them nationally were considered nonviolent or peaceful. We know that we had a couple of issues in Florida, but not widespread mass violence. And we also know that law enforcement was well equipped with laws that are already on the book to try to tamp out any bad actors and make sure that, you know, the laws were being enforced and protecting people's safety, their personal safety and their property. So HB 1 just adds a litany of new criminal offenses that are unnecessary.
This law would make felonies apply to anybody who took part in a crowded protest where one person in that crowd committed a felony. Everybody in the crowd would be charged with the same felony. And that would apply not just to Black Lives Matter protesters. That would apply to Capitol Hill protesters or anti-abortion protesters as well.
That's right. And I'm so glad that you brought that up. That's why this bill is so very bad. It threatens the First Amendment rights for all of us. And, you know, sure, maybe there are in the mix of those different protests that you name, maybe there's one or two that you don't like, but you have to think about your own personal cause, your own personal freedoms and liberties. The First Amendment right is to freedom of speech and freedom of assembly is there for us all to enjoy. And we are concerned that with the passage of HB 1, it will have a chilling effect on protesters. And look, I want to be very clear. This bill was first referenced by the governor in September of 2020 at the height of the protests around Black Lives Matter. The bill itself was filed on January 6th, purportedly under the guise that it was designed to help stop incidents like the violent insurrection that occurred at the nation's capital. But what has remained clear through all of this is that this is a bill that is designed to take aim at those who would protest racial injustice. And, you know, it's just so unfortunate that in 2021, we're still dealing with racial injustice. But to the extent that we are, we certainly have the right to civil disobedience and to use peaceful protest to try to move our country in the right direction.
Let me ask you about voting. There's an effort to make it harder to vote by mail here in Florida. What's your position on that? And what do you think the aim of the backers is?
You know, again, I'm concerned about the hypocrisy, whereas we had the 2020 election and we had, you know, our Secretary of State applauding the job that our supervisors of elections did. We had our governor praising how well we'd done in the election. And it was something to be proud of. I mean, look, we all remember the fiasco of the 2000 election here in Florida, and we should celebrate how far we've come. But now we see these new voting rights bills, and you know, it seems to me that Florida is trying to be a part of this national trend with Republican-led legislatures of introducing legislation that would make it more difficult to vote by mail after the success of voting by mail in the 2020 election. There have been no reports of widespread fraud in Florida, frankly, no reports of fraud other than what I've read that happened, unfortunately, down in a state Senate race down in Miami, where former Senator Frank Artiles was involved in putting a shadow candidate in a race. But, you know, other than that, I've not heard of any reports of fraud. And so these election laws seem to be unnecessary. It's so bad that Senate Bill 90, if I could just mention this one for a second, would make it such that even if you are registered to vote by mail currently in the next election, once this bill passes and takes effect, you would have to re-register to vote by mail. So it is such an inconvenience to the people, and we really should be listening to our bipartisan supervisors of elections who are telling us that we don't need these new laws.
And we only have 20 seconds, but the Republicans say, look, we want to head off future problems. We've had a good past, but we want to anticipate problems in the future, and that's what we're trying to do. In 15 seconds, how would you answer that?
I would say that we need to pay attention to what's happening nationally. And if you look at Georgia and you look at that draconian elections restrictions law that was just passed, and you see the response of corporate America, over 72 black executives just signed onto a letter in the New York Times encouraging corporate America to step up. We don't want that problem in Florida, and therefore we should not be pursuing these bills.
Representative Fentress Driscoll, thanks for coming back on Florida This Week. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Sharon Calvert is a longtime government watchdog and a Republican and Tea Party activist, and is a blogger for Eye on Tampa Bay. Sharon Calvert, welcome back to Florida This Week. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
A few weeks ago, the Florida Supreme Court struck down Hillsborough's transportation tax, and now the Hillsborough County has to decide what to do with about $500 million in money collected over the life of the tax. I've heard some people suggest that we ought to just lower the sales tax in Hillsborough County temporarily until that $500 million is eaten up. What do you think about that idea?
Well, that's obviously one solution, though I do believe that people would prefer, if at all possible, to get that money back into their pockets, especially at a time when so many are struggling. But that said, that may be more complicated, and a more simpler solution, which is fair and equitable, I believe, is one that would provide a tax holiday and take the tax back down to 6.5% until that over $500 million is used up that was taken out of the local economy.
Sharon, you were an opponent of that tax. Now the Hillsborough County Commission looks like it's aiming to put a similar tax back on before voters next year. Will you oppose that tax if it goes on the ballot?
Well, of course, we don't exactly know what it may be, but All for Transportation, who actually were the perpetrators of putting the unlawful tax hike on the ballot in 2018, wants, you know, they're All for Transportation 2.0 to be put back on the 2022 ballot. I will certainly oppose that. We're going through paradigm shifts with the pandemic with regards to where people work, where they live, their traffic patterns. So thinking about a tax, especially another $16 billion tax, I think people don't have that. I think they have a sour taste for pursuing that kind of tax.
The leaders of All for Transportation say it's because of activists like you and the members of the Hillsborough County Commission that ignored Hillsborough's growing transportation problems that they had to do something. And it's, you know, I know as a commuter, the traffic is almost as bad as it was before the crisis. So even though a lot of people are working from home, the roads are crowded out there.
Well, that's true. But also back in 2018, it was unfortunate that the public wasn't well informed and wasn't reported that there was a 10-year transportation funding plan, $812 million, that was already in place, because All for Transportation was allowed to just go out there and basically falsely state they're the only transportation plan in town, and that was wrong. In addition, there was another plan put before the county commission and put before the financial director and the budget director of the county by Dr. Jim Davison that would be able to fund transportation without a tax hike. So they are not the only transportation plan in town. We need a robust discussion about it in the sunshine, not behind closed doors like before. And again, we're in a paradigm shift. So let's kind of see what happens before we tie taxpayers' hands for decades with a tax.
Sharon, you're a grassroots activist and you've had some success. And I'm wondering what you think about Tallahassee over the last few years gradually taking more and more power away from local government, city government and county government. They preempted local laws on everything from trees. They want to preempt local laws about cruise ships and police budgets. And this year they're doing even more of that. Wondering, as a local activist, what do you think about Tallahassee's preemption of local government?
Well, I mean, you're kind of making a broad statement. And what we have found, I mean, look at offer transportation. We were just talking about it. That was pretty much an abuse of using that tax referendum. So those things need to be reined in if there's abuse. What I have seen in some of these bills is it's not that you're taking control, but you're putting in transparency and accountability. I mean, when you're forcing audits to be done, reports, you know, need to be filed, putting it out for people to see where's the money coming from, where is it going. I'm not so sure that it's always taking control. I think that's something that's very misleading when that kind of broad statement is always being used. And in some of the bills that we see today, I believe are just trying to rein in some things that have kind of gotten out of hand at the local level.
All right, Sharon Calvert, thanks for coming back on the program.
Thank you, Rob. Happy Easter.
Lucinda Johnston is the newly elected chair of the Pinellas County Democratic Executive Committee. She's a retired school administrator and educator, and she joins us now. Lucinda, welcome to Florida This Week.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Let me start by asking about the governor. The governor was in Pinellas County this week, and he is saying that he'd like to see teachers rewarded with a $1,000 bonus in the coming fiscal year. The Florida Education Association came out this week and said they would rather not just see teachers rewarded, but they'd also like to see school employees rewarded. What do you think about the governor's proposal?
I think the governor's proposal to give $1,000 to teachers, I mean, that's a wonderful gesture. I would have liked to have seen him protect their health from the beginning of this pandemic, which I thought was crucial. And his push to reopen schools before teachers were ready, I thought was just horrible. And there are a lot of moving parts in a school. There's bookkeepers, there's secretaries, custodians, lunchroom ladies who have daily contact with people, lunchroom aides who sit and eat lunch with children. And I believe everyone that works in a school deserves some kind of bonus. The teachers certainly, I'm not saying that they don't deserve it, but everyone in a school deserves it. We couldn't open the school if it weren't for them.
You mentioned he opened the schools too quickly. I mean, can you point to numbers that show that some of the teachers have been made ill by their exposure to people who might be sick in the school since the schools have reopened?
I wish I could, but I know that there have been some in Pinellas County. And the other part of that was the way that they handled students who tested positive or had siblings who tested positive. And there was absolutely no contact tracing, no ability to keep siblings of children who had tested positive from attending school. It was just a lot of policy that I felt like, and the teachers that I still associate with felt like were, endangering people.
We've been talking a lot on this program about the bills to make it harder to vote by mail in the state of Florida. We had a state representative on earlier who's backing the bill, and he says this is not a major change, and it's really not going to affect or reduce the number of people who are voting. I'm wondering what your thoughts are about these potential changes to voting here in Florida.
Well, life is busy, and the biggest part of this bill that troubles me is that people who are now expecting to get a ballot, they won't get a ballot unless they ask for one. And the responsibility of notifying people of that is going to be on our supervisors of elections at a county level, who have all, you know, almost all of them have objected to that, even ours here in Pinellas County, who is a Republican and who does a fine job, by the way. But when people are expecting a bill, they don't want, a ballot, they don't want to have to request that ballot again. They think they're getting it through the 2020 election. So that's my feelings on it. I also think that, I know Senator Baxley dismissed it and defended it and said it would probably invigorate people. And it's certainly invigorating Democrats, because our phones are blowing up and our emails to volunteer to get out on the streets and knock on doors and make calls to make sure people know that they have to request that ballot. So he certainly invigorated Democrats. I don't know if that was his intention.
I looked up the numbers, and we only have about 40 seconds left, but 55% of seniors vote by mail. A lot of seniors in the 2020 election use the mail-in system to vote. When we hear people say it's not going to tamp down the vote, what do you think?
I believe it is, and I believe it is it's an attack on our seniors. And the other part about the bill is that you can't collect for people now. You used to be able to collect ballots and take them to the supervisors of elections office as long as you had permission from the people that did. And not being able to do that is going to be very harmful to seniors who can't drive and don't trust the mail. I always deliver mine because I just want to make sure it gets there. So.
Well, Lucinda Johnston, thanks a lot. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Well, finally, singer Jackson Browne is known for his advocacy on behalf of human rights, the environment, and the arts. The crisis on the Mexican border inspired him to write this new song, The Dreamer. Stay safe. We'll see you next week.
That whisper al corazón. To the heart. Solo deseos que susurran al corazón.
Jackson Browne there, closing out the Florida This Week from this past weekend. And my guests on that program were Lucinda Johnston, who's the new executive director of the Democratic Party in Pinellas County, and then also Sharon Calvert, a Republican Party activist, longtime Tea Party activist, State Representative Fentress Driscoll from Hillsborough County, a Democrat, and State Representative Blaise Ingolia, a Republican from Spring Hill. And if you want to comment about anything my guest said, you can email us here in the studio, the address dj@wmnf.org. You can also call us, and we'll talk about some of these topics. You can call us at 813-239-9663. And we can talk about the issues that we discussed. Among those issues, the voting law changes being discussed in Tallahassee, the HB1, the bill that would increase penalties on protesters if part of the protest turns violent, the debate over whether Hillsborough County needs a transportation sales tax. The Florida Supreme Court threw out the sales tax that had already existed in Hillsborough County, and possible bonuses for teachers, which Governor Ron DeSantis says should happen. He's taking federal COVID relief money and saying that we should give some of that money in bonuses to teachers. The teachers union says, wait a minute, all school employees should get a bonus. So let me read some of these emails that have come in so far regarding what we've heard. Bob in Palmetto writes, please ask for documented proof about mail fraud. And that did come up a little bit. Several of my questions dealt with that to State Representative Ingolia. And he said that there were some mail-in fraud examples, but not many. But he said that they had happened. And you'll have to go back and listen to the program to listen to hear exactly what he said. But I don't think that there was any example of widespread mail-in voting fraud that Ingolia presented. But he did present a few examples. Jeff writes this, in a true democracy, you want as many people as possible to vote. Of course, there should be mechanisms to prevent cheating. As far as not being able to give out food or water, people should be prepared and bring their own food and water. If you feel one political party is too nitpicking about voting rules, take note of that and don't vote for those kind of nitpicking people in the future, writes Jeff. And then here's an email regarding a topic that's going to come up today at 12 noon on Sean Canaan's Midpoint program. Greg writes, in 2016, the Florida sinkhole at the Mosaic Fertilizer site leaked radioactive water. Why would Piney Points not be radioactive, writes Greg. And I guess we're going to have to wait and see what the tests are of that water that's currently flowing into Tampa Bay. Speaking of that, Governor Ron DeSantis says crews are working to prevent the collapse of a large wastewater pond to avoid a catastrophic flood. Manatee County officials say the latest models show that a breach at the old phosphate plant reservoir along the south shore of Tampa Bay could gush out 340 million gallons of water in a matter of minutes, risking a 20-foot-high wall of water. Authorities say 316 homes have been evacuated so far. Florida Department of Environmental Protection says the water in the pond is mixed salt water with processed water, but the state DEP says it's not expected to be toxic. Just quoting what the Associated Press is reporting about that. The Bradenton Herald is reporting that hundreds of Manatee jail inmates are being evacuated from the toxic flood threat at Piney Point. The sheriff has initially said 300 inmates would be relocated. Late last night, those plans changed. Wells has ordered 345 inmates to be bused to an undisclosed location. Inmates were selected for transfer based on lowest risk. According to the sheriff's office spokesperson, the remaining 721 inmates sheltered at the facility have been moved to the second floor of the facility, along with about 100 staff members and medical equipment. Additionally, sandbags have been placed at every entrance to the jail that has to be evacuated because of the risk of the overflow at the Piney Point plant. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Today at noon on the Midpoint program, Sean will be talking about the Piney Point disaster, and local and state officials will provide a media briefing today at 1 p.m. to talk about the latest efforts to address the compromised phosphogypsum stack at the Piney Point reservoirs. The press conference will be held at Scale Avenue, near U.S. 41 at 1 o'clock this afternoon. I think Manatee County is putting that on Facebook. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Andy in Dunedin. Andy, what would you like to comment about so far?
Hey, Rod. Happy Monday. Yeah, 20 people in, what, a 10-year period that he was talking about voter issues with. But I wanted to talk real quick about Piney Point. And while they are trying to avert a huge disaster with that thing collapsing, they are still pumping that water out of there, and it's still going into the bay. So that is a major problem that people need to stay on top of. And Mosaic, and I've said this before in the past, just from having a marketing background and watching their happy, shiny people say what a wonderful company Mosaic is, every bit of this should be on them. This is their trash. This is their mess. And they've made way too much money off of this state and its natural resources. Every bit of it needs to be on their back. They need to take care of this.
And when you say it's on Mosaic's back, did Mosaic own Piney Point? Or is that what you're saying?
That I'm not sure of, but if this has anything to do with the phosphate industry, I got to think that goes right back to Mosaic. I may be wrong, but I mean, I guess.
Yeah, I think there's several companies involved in the phosphate mining in Florida. Mosaic being one of them. I think the problem is that companies are able, once they extract the phosphate from the ground, once they say, okay, we're done, they're able to declare bankruptcy, and then they leave the phosphate holding ponds behind, and they leave the mounds behind. And so the public is holding the bag, essentially.
And it's the same thing that goes on with the coal industry up in West Virginia. They dump all their trash into the valleys and rivers and everything and just walk away, and everybody's left to deal with it. So.
Yeah. All right, Andy, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you. And let's go to Robert in Lakeland. Robert, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Good afternoon. Thank you for listening to me. What I would like to point out are two bills which are being debated in the Florida Senate, HB 35, SB 402. They are trying to eliminate the newspaper publishing requirement for public notices. I would not have even known about those bills if it weren't for my local newspaper here in Lakeland. And the newspapers provide a valuable product to the public. And I consider the money the state spends to publish those notices money well spent, which I cannot say about much some of the other spending. So I urge you to please vote against those bills and allow the newspapers to continue what they have done successfully for hundreds of years. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Robert, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. You know, that's a big issue, and it goes to the sustainability of the newspaper business. Let's go to Glenn in Manatee County. Glenn, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
I'm calling about Piney Point. You know, this has been going on for decades. Our elected officials, not only in Tallahassee, but the EPA, federal government, have all stuck their heads in the sand for the last 20 years. It's unfortunate that it takes a catastrophic incident like this to finally wrap everybody together to try to get this done. And I'd like to correct the last caller. It's not owned by Mosaic. It's owned by another holding company that also went bankrupt. But I will tell you this. This is only one pond, one gypsum stack of the 25 that are in the Tampa Bay area that are owned by Mosaic. So they need to step up to the plate. You know, this radioactive water is around for thousands of years. Those plastic liners, if we get 100 years out of them, we'll be doing good. But I just see continuous catastrophic failures on the other 25 existing holding ponds. And there needs to be some legislation to clean this up efficiently and never let another shovel stick in the Florida ground for phosphate.
So, Glenn, is there any guarantee that Mosaic won't leave its 25 holding mounds or ponds behind and let the taxpayers pay for the cleanup? Is there any guarantee that Mosaic will cover the costs of remediation of those ponds and maybe put the land back into some normal existence?
No, I don't. You know, they could file bankruptcy. They're a pretty sizable company. They do bond out. But back in 2017, our local commissioners gave an additional 300 acres to Mosaic to rape without any long-term consequences that they see. They're trying to get into Soto County now. We'll see how that goes. But Mosaic, their reclaim process that they say they do such a good job is a farce. It's a marketing ploy. They have not reclaimed anywhere near what they said they were in a timeline to do so, and our county commissioners don't hold them to it either. So it's one big disaster going to happen. Hopefully the technology will put some brains together to see how we can clean this water efficiently and reuse it at some point in time. But they have stuck their heads in the sand for 20 years. Now all of a sudden, it's one big problem. It's been a problem for 20 years, Rob.
And Glenn, the Florida DEP in that news report that I just read from the Associated Press said that it's not sure, we're not sure the water is toxic. Let me see if I can find the language. But the water that's being pumped into Tampa Bay, do you know anything about the water being pumped into Tampa Bay?
Well, if you look at the water, it's green coming out of the main. And there is a captain right now in Tampa Bay doing a live stream on Facebook showing the algae already starting. No fish, no mollusks that are normally in that Bishop Bay at this time of year are non-existent. This is a red tide catastrophe waiting to happen.
And where can people watch that video, that live stream?
Just tell him to go to Facebook. I believe it's Captain Hawkins. I'm not sure. But I'll send you the link when I get to my computer.
Okay, great. Glenn, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to John in Port Richey. John, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Hey, thanks for the show, Rob. Couple of things. First of all, on the tax that was collected for the transportation, it's my understanding that the Supreme Court threw that whatever law out or thing out because it said that only the county had the ability to choose where it was spent, not the taxpayers. Is that pretty much correct?
Yeah, the Supreme Court did say that it's up to the elected county officials to decide how the money is spent, and it shouldn't be pre-planned by the folks that put it on the ballot.
All right. Was there anything in there that they said that they couldn't spend that money or they had to give it back to the people?
I don't know.
I would think there's a real simple solution to this problem since the money's already been collected. Let the county commissioners go, hey, we're going to put that towards transportation like the voters wanted. I mean, that makes sense to me because the voters said we wanted that. They collected the money. Now the only issue is the Supreme Court says that the county commissioners have to decide where that money goes. Fine. Let them say, put it towards transportation. Problem solved.
Yeah. You know, I'm not sure about the ins and outs of it because I think what the Florida Supreme Court was saying was that the money was collected illegally in the first place because it was collected under...
That's why I wasn't sure about whether or not they had to give it back or they couldn't spend it or whatever. Okay. That's what I wasn't sure about. And the other thing about the gentleman who said that it was disingenuous to say that you couldn't give water to the people within that 100 feet and now they want to make it 150 feet. Well, there's a simple question there. Can I go give water to these people? And the answer is no, you can't under this proposed bill. So it's not really disingenuous. What is disingenuous is to say we want to stop people from harassing those people in line, which there's already laws against that. So you can't go in there and harass these people
You can't electioneer within a certain number of feet.
Right. So there's always laws there. So it's disingenuous on his part to say, oh, this is to stop people from giving, you know, harassing people. It's, you know, when you say it's there to stop people from giving water and he says that's disingenuous, I think he's just totally incorrect.
All right, John, thank you. Thank you for your thoughts. And if you're a listener and you've got thoughts that you want to add to the conversation, please call us at 813-239-9663. Let's go to Craig, who's in Sarasota. Craig, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
I would like to say I wish I could understand how it's possible that a limited liability corporation is allowed under the law to even purchase real estate with such liability attached to it?
That is a great question. I don't know.
And I would guess that when a giant who is in the business and makes a great deal of money selling something that people need, when they want to use the land in that way, they're permitted to do so because they have the wherewithal to make sure it's made right if something goes wrong. So I don't understand how something was ever established where then that person who was given the permission that they could handle it could sell it to somebody who can just by their very nature say, well, we're not liable for that. Wouldn't that shift the liability back to whoever created that situation in the first place, like your caller a few minutes ago said?
Yeah, my understanding is that the company that created the situation is bankrupt. And so this was the property was in a state of bankruptcy, and this holding company, this LLC, came in and purchased the property because they had ideas about what to do there on the south shores of Tampa Bay. But I think you raise a good issue. If they couldn't do the cleanup, how were they allowed to buy the property?
And how can you, I understand bankruptcy, absolving yourself from the monetary value, but, I mean, who is held responsible criminally? I'm a contractor. If I do something, build something, and somebody gets killed from my negligence, I'll get locked up. Even if I can't afford to pay or compensate the family or whatever, that doesn't matter. I'm locked up because, you know, of the damage is done. I don't understand how we've gotten to this point, but the show is great. Thank you for sharing
all the
information that we're getting.
Thanks a lot, Craig. Thanks. And Sean is going to pay more attention to the issue of Piney Point in the next hour, so stick around. Let's go to John in Palmetto. John, you're on. What would you like to say?
How you doing? Well, as far as Mosaic goes, as far as why they don't have to claim bankruptcy, it's because they get involved in the first, when they buy a piece of property, it's then protected by what's called the Burt-Harris Act. So whatever they decide to do with it, they should be allowed to do with it unless the county or the state can prove that what they're going to do is full of fault. And they've sued many people in order to try and protect that. What Mosaic does is each and every permit is usually 12 to 20 years long. And within that time, they go through a few sets of locals that are opposed to it. And it's just such a long period. The commissioners know they're going to permit. And what they do, how they get out from under it and not do the cleanup. Right now, they're under a U.S. Degree that was a $2 billion settlement about 4 years ago. And that what they promised to do was to start operating with care. But the reason that they get signed off is in Florida, the state and the local government own most of the mineral rights. And what happens as they go through the process of being able to call it a mine that's been reclamated or had reclamation, what they do is they do ask for modification first on their permit that allows them to bump it back a few years, exhausting everybody. And then after that, they ask for a variance. And they use excuses very similar to that of, like, we can't find the dirt to fill the holes. We don't have the money to do this, one that they've used many times. Excuse me. And then so what they do is they bring it before the commission to have them sign off. So they've signed off on 40-some percent. The actual reclamation is under 2%. But when they sign off on it, then that's put into the reclamated because they've been forgiven for it. And the reason that the commission does it is because they don't get their mineral rights checked until the mine's been signed off. And there's millions of dollars that sit there waiting for the local government and state that it wasn't even budgeted in, so it allows them to help fill some of their pitfall. Well, that's just some of it.
All right.
That we're at.
Yeah. John, thanks a lot. Yeah, we'll have to pay a whole lot more attention to it, and I promise we will. John, thank you.
I do want to add this. One thing they have to stop from doing, and I sent you a piece, Tom, I had from about 5 years ago, on ASR wells. I can tell that DeSantis said that they're going to kill all the fish. They are. But if he's trying to get them to go ahead and use the ASR, pump it into the ASR wells, which that piece I sent you, well documented that it doesn't work, and that's what we should be worrying about, because all that water is about to go down where our drinking water comes from.
Okay, and you're talking about injecting this some water into the aquifer. John, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call.
Yes.
All right. I should say too that Piney Point is not owned by Mosaic. I think Let's just get that clear. I want to mention one other thing. This is from one of our new reporters, David Hackett. Next week is the contract deadline for union workers at Frontier Communications, a cable and internet provider. The company and the union are trying to work out a new contract. And a local labor union is waging a public awareness campaign focused on Frontier Communications' plans to cut health benefits for workers. And so we're going to hear this report now from one of WMNF's new volunteer reporters, David Hackett, about a contract that expires next week.
It's Super Bowl Sunday in Tampa, and dozens of Frontier Communications workers are on a picket line north of the stadium. They're protesting Frontier's proposal to dump health insurance for retirees and make workers pay more for it. This after Frontier executives took the company through Chapter 11 bankruptcy and got bonuses worth about $60 million.
I believe the total number was $63 million.
That's Keith LaPlante. He's the president of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Tampa Local 824. Most of his 1,500 members work for Frontier as customer service reps, cable splicers, and other jobs that keep the internet on.
We have technicians that go in people's homes, businesses, you know, hospitals, fire police. They maintain the network.
LaPlante says these are essential workers.
When the virus started, our technicians didn't stop. They continued to do whatever the company asked to keep the people on the network.
Now, Frontier wants to dump health insurance for retirees and make workers pay more.
Higher monthly premiums, higher copays, higher out-of-network, higher deductibles, out-of-pocket maximums, stuff like that.
Although it has received hundreds of millions of federal tax dollars since 2015 to extend broadband service to rural areas, Frontier is criticized for underinvesting in network infrastructure. In 2016, Frontier borrowed billions of high-interest dollars to buy Verizon's Fios networks. The initial handoff failed. Customers left, and Frontier lost money. 4 years on, Frontier filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Investors got crushed. Frontier executives got bonuses, according to multiple published reports. Now, LaPlante says Frontier workers deserve as good as executives got.
We're the ones that spend a lifetime digging holes, climbing ladders, going in attics. We want to be made whole like they made the executives whole.
Frontier did not respond to inquiries for this report. For WMNF News, I'm David Hackett.
And that issue is coming to a head next week. Well, Gary writes in to say, I've always believed that any businesses that produce any kind of dangerous byproduct should be required to have an escrow account in an amount necessary to clean up any incidents or clean up when the business goes out of business or sells the business. That's Gary's point, and I think it's a really good one. Let's go to Donna in Bradenton. Donna, thanks for calling Radioactivity. You're on the air. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. Thank you. I just am really concerned about the fact that their first choice was just to immediately allow all of this wastewater just to go into our waterways and into Tampa Bay. Why would they not let it just seep into the ground, knowing that, you know, it could affect the aquifer, but maybe provide some type of something similar to a septic tank or somewhere that it can be put into the ground instead of just letting it run loose into our water where it's going to cause such horrible devastation to our sea life.
Well, Don, I think the answer to that is that the water is being held back by earthen dams. And there is a plastic lining on the bottom, but the earthen dam and the plastic lining are giving way. And so what you've got is 400 plus million gallons of water.
Right.
That may or may not be toxic. We've heard from both sides of that today. And it's about to force the earthen dam to collapse. And so that wall of mud and water is going to spread out over U.S. 41 and potentially take out 300 homes that are downstream of this disaster. So there's no way you can build a septic tank that's going to hold 400 million gallons. The structure was built, I think, to last a few years, but it wasn't built to last this many years, and that's the problem. These phosphate companies go out of business, and they leave the public essentially holding the bag. You know, they took all the profits while the company was operating, and now they've said, well, we can't afford to clean it up, so we're going bankrupt. And so that's why.
Yeah, it's just sickening. It's just painful in my heart that it's going into our water and our sea life. And I understand it was logistically it would be extremely expensive to try to figure out any other alternative than what they did. But it just hurts. That's all.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Donna, thank you. Thank you for that. Joe's in Valrico, and he writes, before raising the gas tax further, the Hillsborough County Commission should look at the impact fees imposed on new growth. It has been a long time since the impact fees have been raised. There's no reason that growth should not help pay for itself. Instead, the developers just keep getting richer and richer, and the current residents are paying for it. That's Joey in Valrico. Joey, thank you. If you want to comment about today's program, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on the comment line, which is extension 115. I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Sean. He's going to be talking about the Piney Point potential disaster. And this is WMNF in Tampa. Frank Knox has been our phone producer today. We're going to take a 5-minute break and get the latest news from NPR, and we'll be right back.